It is our pleasure and honor to welcome back to the program now this morning Wisconsin's first congressional representative and the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Paul Ryan. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning, Tim. How you doing this morning?
I am great. It's a sunny Monday. Fabulous to have you with us.
Great. Finally got some rain, too. We needed that for sure.
Yeah, because I hadn't mowed my lawn in a week, so I will take care of that.
It was good for you then.
Yeah, I guess so. We've talked the last couple of times. You've been referring to this national Republican agenda, so to speak, I guess, that you say will be coming out so that when we get to the presidential contest, there'll be more than just two candidates. There'll be a whole kind of Republican versus Democrat exchange of ideas. How is progress on that coming? Can you give us any, like, sneak preview bullet points?
Actually, it's coming very well. This is the week where the last week of our members doing listening sessions with their constituents, collecting ideas. When we return to Washington next week, that's where we start putting pen to paper and drafting. We've been drafting along. We have our working groups going on in the House. It's five categories. It's what do you do to grow the economy? What do you replace Obamacare with to deal with the massive premium increases people have experienced? How do you save these health care programs from going bankrupt? Number three is how do you move people from welfare to work? What are better effective strategies at combating poverty? Number four, how do you rebuild our military and secure national security? And then number five, how do you restore what we call self-government, which is government of the people, by the people, through our elected representatives, to bring some accountability to this unelected fourth branch of government of these unelected bureaucrats writing all our rules and regulations that are really doing harm to our economy and taking away self-government. This is an agenda that we've been going around the country doing listening sessions. Members of Congress are engaged and working with each other to put this together. And then when we return, we start drafting. And then we roll out early summer, around June, before the Cleveland Convention, to show an agenda to the country on what we think are the big fundamental issues to get our country back on track, to grow our economy, to prevent our debt crisis, to have health care and welfare reform. And I think one of the crown jewels is tax reform. It's really clear to me. I was with the Chamber of Commerce for the folks at McGuanago Saturday night talking about this issue. You've got all these businesses that are competing with other countries, you know, Canada and England or Mexico or China, and we tax our businesses at such higher rates than they tax theirs, and it's putting us at a huge competitive disadvantage. Heck, Johnson Controls is now becoming an Irish company because of tax laws for many reasons, among other reasons, excuse me. These things we think are really in need of reform. And it's what you need to do to get this debt under control, this economy growing, and give the country a choice. And so that is what we're doing. We're going to roll it out before the convention. And my hope and goal here is our add value from Congress is to add some substance to this campaign, make it less of a personality contest, more of an ideas contest, to give the country a very clear choice, not based on personalities, but based on agendas, ideas, platforms. What do you need to do to get the country back on track? And that's what. And we're well on schedule.
You're speaking in relatively unified terms, Congressman, and that's something we all like, but I don't think we all believe necessarily. Within the House Republicans, and then throw in whoever the Republican presidential nominee might be, can you get enough consensus to move this kind of agenda forward?
Yeah, in the House, I feel good about it. I feel good about the unity in the House Republican caucus. We've already been able to pass the biggest transportation legislation in over a decade, the biggest K-12 education reform legislation in 25 years. We rewrote our trade export laws, our trade accountability laws. We made tax policies permanent for businesses at the end of the year. We're in the middle of fixing our opioid problem and having opioid reform, and we're moving criminal justice reform soon after that, all based on consensus in the House. So we've been showing that we can get some pretty good things done, but in divided government where we have a liberal president and a conservative Congress, there's just a lot of things that won't get done. That's what this agenda is about. You speak about the presidential, Tim. I don't know what's going to happen in the presidential campaign. I really don't. You know, obviously Donald Trump has momentum, but these things are beyond our control. And we don't think it's in our interest to wait around and see who the nominee is to then decide what is it we believe in. We already know what we believe in. We know what the country's problems are. We listen to our constituents. And so that's why we're working on this agenda now and not waiting. I've spoken to Donald Trump. I've spoken to Ted Cruz and John Kasich about this agenda. All of them think we're heading in the right direction and think it's a good idea.
The ability to have an at-length conversation is important in those kind of issues, but we live in a snippet and soundbite world, as you well know. You recently made some statements about health care and reforming Obamacare, or I guess repealing and replacing it. And immediately I saw the headlines, Congressman, that say, Congressman Ryan, Speaker Paul Ryan wants to kick people with pre-existing conditions Obamacare. Can you tell us, is that really how you feel? You just don't want these people to have health care?
No. And this is what this is what the people who are obviously trying to defend what I call the indefensible Obamacare are trying to say, taking comments out of context, looking at one of several dozen ideas that we're going to be foreshadowing on replacing Obamacare. The point is, Obamacare is giving families double-digit premium increases year after year, massive increases in deductibles, making the insurance basically unaffordable. You have insurance companies just dumping it. United, the biggest healthcare insurer in much of the country, just walking away from Obamacare. Mm-hmm. So people are getting fewer choices. We will offer a comprehensive alternative. And yes, I do believe there's a better way at solving the pre-existing condition problem than forcing everybody to buy the government's plan, which is becoming more and more unaffordable by the day. So look, I think Obamacare is indefensible. I appreciate the fact that people are trying to defend it. I believe we can come up with much better ideas that give everybody more affordable health care, including people with pre-existing conditions, and we will be rolling that out along with many other ideas about a better way to go come fall.
There was a move last week in the House, and let me see if I can simplify the unsimplifiable here. As I understand it, it basically would block a Department of Labor rule that says, in essence, investment advisors and retirement plan providers, so if you got your money in a 401k, an IRA, that kind of thing, they need to be able to prove that they're acting in the best interest of their customers, which I thought, well, that sounds pretty good. And then
I
found that a lot of Republicans were opposed to it. So as I look, what I seem to see there, and you tell me if I am incorrect, is that for whatever reason, in that rule, they wanted to carve out the largest of those types of entities and say, well, you don't have to meet the same requirements of proving that fiduciary relationship as the smaller guys would have to. Is that essentially correct?
That and among other things. This is classic crony capitalism. This is classic big government helping really big businesses and hurting the small guy, hurting the small business. Go across the street to the Hayes Block and ask a couple of those men who are selling, some of them are a friend of mine, so those men and women who are selling investment advice, setting up 401ks and IRAs for middle-income Janesville people. They're losing their business because of this rule. This is the government writing a new rule that makes it nearly impossible for businesses to offer investment advice to their clients, and therefore they won't continue doing so. I was in Kenosha 2 weeks ago. I met with four investment advisors from MetLife and New York Life who are going to lose 50 to 85% of their business to their clients. I met with a guy from Janesville who has 850 clients, middle-income people, and he will keep 15 clients, according to his employer, after this rule is put in place, a rule that nobody in Congress gets to vote on whether it goes into place or not. That's why we did something extraordinary called the Congressional Review Act to say this is something Congress does not approve of. It exceeds the executive branch's authority. And by the way, we had a lot of Democrats voting with us. It does it in such a way that it makes a person liable for any possible plan disruptions or reductions. So imagine the stock market goes down. You don't like that fact that that happened. And then you can go sue your investment advisor to get your gains back. You think he's going to offer you investment advice if that can happen? What this does, it basically takes away the private sector and pushes people to the government for their livelihood, for their retirement benefits. And that, I think, is at the end of the day what's behind this idea. Everybody's in favor of disclosure. Everybody's in favor of making sure that the interest of the investment advisor is aligned with the interest of their client. Nobody opposes that. But it's the kind of rules that they're putting in place which will make it impossible for low- and middle-income people to get investment advice on how to save for whatever they want to save for, retirement, kids' college fund, you know, a healthcare problem, a rainy day fund. They will go out of business because of this rule. And this is something that is an example of outreach federal government doing these things that are basically laws which will put people out of business, make it harder for middle-income people to get investment advice, and it doesn't even go through Congress. It's not even a law that Congress passes. It's just unelected bureaucrats writing these rules. It's a good example of the overreach and the unaccountability of the federal government and the crony capitalism, which will simply mean just the big banks will win and the small independent providers will lose, and that is not what the government should be doing.
Well, and interestingly, that's become a huge talking point, at least on the Democratic side of the aisle in the presidential races, breaking up these big banks and not giving them all the power that they have, and this would seem to give them even a little bit more.
And the irony of that, in a weird way, Bernie Sanders and I, sometimes we come around full circle and agree on points, not the solutions. Dodd-Frank, which is Obama's law, makes big banks bigger and small banks fewer. It gives more power and concentration to very large banks that could trigger a taxpayer bailout down the road. So that is the kind of government we're dealing with, which I call big crony capitalism. Big business, big government, joining in a common cause, rigging the rules, stacking the deck, and giving, you know, basically preference to those with political access. And the small business person is left by the wayside. That, to me, is what is wrong with this approach to economic growth. It's not growing the economy, and that is what we're dealing with, and that's what we're trying to combat.
Let me turn just for a minute or two here to the election season. There's been relentless focus on the presidential primary process, but aren't the Senate and congressional races this fall, from a governmental operational standpoint, equally as important?
Absolutely, and I think, you know, you turn on the TV, you don't even think about that stuff because it's all about the presidential primaries. And I think when the fall comes, you'll see, by the way, you'll see Ron Johnson and Russ Feingold in a big race. You'll see, you know, big races all around the country because Congress also is up for grabs. Every other year, the House is up for grabs. Everybody's up for election and a third of the Senate. And so this election will not only determine who the next president is, but who's running Congress and what direction the country takes. Again, Tim, this is why I believe we owe our fellow citizens, our constituents, an agenda, a plan. Here's what we would do if the country breaks the political logjam that is in front of us so we can actually have an agenda to get this country back on track. Offer that agenda, give people a choice, and then if we win the election, we will have earned the mandate to put these reforms in place. That's the kind of clarifying, honest, upfront election that I am dying to have, that I think people deserve.
Well, at least one person in your own district apparently disagrees with your approach, at least to the degree that you're being challenged for the first time, I believe, in history with a Republican challenger that will cause a primary coming up in August. You're used to running against Democratic challengers. How will you run against a member of your own party in a primary?
I had a primary my first time I ran, but yeah, you're right. This is the first time since then. Look, I'm going to be me. Everybody knows who I am. I think the fact that my colleagues drafted and elected me to become the Speaker of the House is a testament to the fact that I am capable, that I get things done, that I can lead. And more importantly, I have negotiated a number of compromises to get things done. I think that's good and prudent. Some people on my side of the aisle don't think that that's a good thing to do. So I drafted a compromise on transportation legislation, on education legislation, on trade legislation, on things that I think were important that Republicans and Democrats came together on. I understand that that's not popular in some corners, and therefore you get criticized for that. No matter what you do, if you're leading, you're going to get criticized. So I can't worry about that, think about that. I just do what I'm doing, let my employers make their decision, and that's the best I can hope for.
Let me ask you one question as it relates to the presidential. From the Speaker of the House's chair, assuming that you're still Speaker of the House when the election season is over, which candidate do you think would be the easiest to work with in Congress? I don't care which side of the aisle you're choosing it from.
The Republican.
Okay. You won't go into first, second, third choices.
No,
there,
how's
I know
that?
You won't.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. Speaker Paul Ryan, a pleasure as always to spend a few minutes with you. Thanks for your time, sir. We'll talk again soon.
Always, Tim. Have a good one. Take care of you.
All right. Thank you. There you go. Wisconsin's first district congressman and Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, Paul Ryan, exclusively on your talk show. We'll be right back.